En glede for meg å ønske velkommen til podcast nummer 4 av fotballtreneren. Podcasten for fotballtrenere av fotballtrenere. I dag skal vi innom et veldig spennende tema. Det at jeg skal møte to utlandske trenere som har virket i norsk fotball. Og få en del av deres erfaringer på hvordan det å jobbe og være fotballtrener i Norge. Men før vi kommer der, så vil jeg gjerne fortelle litt om trenerforeningen. Norsk fotballtrenerforening den kollektive organisasjonen for trenere i Norge. Den kollektive stemmen for alle trenere. Det oss som representerer trenerstanden og sørger for både trygghet, sikkerhet og inspirasjon for trenerne i norsk fotball. For å få dette til har vi med oss Norsk Tipping som en av våre gode samarbeidspartnere. Norsk Tipping generalsponsor for norsk fotball og bidrar voldsomt for at både trenere, anlegg og mange andre sider av fotballen skal fungere veldig bra. Norsk fotballtrenerforening har over 3000 medlemmer. Vi ønsker å bli flere, vi ønsker å bli en større organisasjon hvis du ikke medlem. Meld deg inn i trenerforeningen. Gå til fotballtreneren.no og du vil få mer informasjon om medlemskap i foreningen. Dagens tema hvordan det å være en utenlandsk trener i norsk fotball? How is it to be a foreign coach in the Norwegian game? Sammen med meg i dag så har jeg med meg to flotte trenere og medlemmer i trenerforeningen til å dele en del av sine erfaringer med å være fotballtrener i Norge. Det Jonathan Hill, som har bakgrunn fra flere norske klubber og selvfølgelig en rekke utenlandske, kommer opprinnelig fra England, men bor nå i Tromsø. Og det Mario Jovic, kroatisk trener, som har vært i Norge i flere år, i flere klubber, og bakgrunn fra Kroatia, som nå bor i Østfold. De vil begge snakke engelsk i denne podcasten, men det satser vi på at ikke skal bli noe problem. Og jeg gleder meg veldig nå til å høre mer om deres bakgrunn, og ikke minst hvorfor de endte i Norge, og kanskje aller viktigst, hvilke erfaringer de har gjort som trenere. En god inngang for klubbledere og mange andre som vurderer å ha en utlandstrener i sin egen klubb. Yes, it's a very good day. We just had the 17th of May, and we had some really good hours there with the family, even though the corona pandemic is still here. We are looking forward now to seeing the game being opened much more up. So it's great having you both here today, and I just want to start with you, Mario Jovic. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you've done, you know, in order to become a professional football coach.
First of all, thank you, Teddy, for the invitation, and welcome also to Jonathan, if he has something to add. I started 14 years ago in a third-level club in Croatia. I was working there for 7 years, and after that I went to the top division club FC Osijek in Croatia in the youth department, and later on coming back in the same club where I started as a senior coach of the first team in the age of approximately 26-27 in the third level of football in Croatia. After I experienced and all of these things and been also in partly in federation in charge about youth developmental camps, I decided to try myself in another culture, in another country, and actually, very accidentally, through the contact of one of my players, ex-players from Osijek, whose parents moved to Norway, I moved to Norway and try myself here.
Thank you, Mario. My other guest is Jonathan or John Hill, and John, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Morning, Teddy. Morning, Mario. Thank you for inviting me. Mine's a little bit longer than Mario, but that's due to probably my age. I'm 50 years of age now. Obviously, I was started off as a youth player at Everton. Played for the national. I was in schoolboy international youth. I then moved to Crewe Alexandra under the guidance of Dario Grady. Played alongside David Platt, John Pemberton, Jeff Thomas, Rob Jones. You know, it was a Crewe was a developing club. I then moved, picked up some big injuries, moved to Rochdale. Then I was going to Newcastle, well, my injuries, I couldn't get over them. So fortunately, God had given me a bit of a brain, and I went to study a sports science honours degree at Liverpool John Moores University. I'd already started the coaching career from being 17. So from John Moores University, I studied a sports science honours degree. I did a master's in education and went into secondary school education, 11 to 18, in Wigan, which is in between Manchester and Liverpool. Wigan isn't a football town, it's a rugby town. A couple of the students there were signed for Wigan Athletic at the time, and they told my ex-coach that I was working, I was the head of sports there. He invited me down and I became his assistant at Wigan Athletic. Various head coaches, Steve Bruce, the last coach was Roberto Martinez, and I was offered the reserve team job there, but it meant taking Dave Crompton's job, who had employed me there part-time. Wasn't very comfortable with that, so I decided, no, I'm not going to do that. And I got invited by Everton, my old club, Blackburn and Man United. I was actually going to sign for Everton, and Paul McGuinness called me, who was the head of the academy, and invited me to have a chat. And you don't turn Man United down. I went, and then I spent 9 years at Manchester United. This was before the ECCC, which is very similar to the academy classification, started. So I had a dual role. I was working in education and I was working at Man United. And I worked with many top coaches and many top players. We can probably talk about that later. I felt that the workload was too much doing two jobs. And then the opportunity came up to go, a bit like Mario said, to try a different adventure. It was back into full-time football. And I moved to Jordan. And I was the national youth head coach for the under-16s and under-20s. And I was the assistant technical director under an Egyptian, Captain Mahmoud El Jouhari, who'd been the Egyptian national coach. So I was there for 2 years. We had relative success. I moved back to England to work at Manchester City to set up their new program, full-time schoolboy scholarship program. I moved to do the under-18s, but ended up doing the 15s because of my experience with education, because we had to have a full-time education program alongside a full-time football program. Spent a year there. And then a close colleague of mine, Mark Dempsey, which a lot of you will know, who's now back at Man United, there was an agreement with Ole Gunnar that when he took a job back in Norway at Molde, Mark would go as assistant. Mark was at Tromsø, at Teal. So Teal were looking for a replacement, and I went to Teal from there. So, and then flitted around. So I went from Teal, I moved back to Fulham as the assistant head coach in the Premier League. Spent 8-9 months there, and then came back to Tromsdalen, where my partner is, and I helped with Tuil for a short period of time. Then I moved back to England to work at Sheffield Wednesday as the sporting director with Glenn Roeder, who obviously a lot of people know about Glenn. And then I came back to Tuil as kind of a sporting development director. And then the last 2 years I've been the head coach up until where we are now. And I work at the local Vidagor school during these last 4 year period as well. So that's where I'm now.
That's where you are now, and it's good to have you here with us today, John. And I'm going to come back a little bit about your experiences, but I'm going to pass over to Mario, because you said that there were partially some things about some family moving to Norway that made you approach and coming to the over here. Can you say a little bit more about that, you know, how you actually ended up at Follo in the Norwegian game as a coach?
Yes. I decided together with my wife to come here, and one of the players that I coach in Osijek, his family has been moving here already before. And when I spoke with them what they think about Norway, they said, you should try to come here. And then I just came to visit them, and In meanwhile, Follow was being relegated from OBOS. And they actually searched for some coaches in the youth department. And I apply for the job, go to the first meeting, go to the second, go to the practical part of the practice, and then I got the job. And after first year in G19 as assistant to Hugo Vicente, then I got offered to G16 as a head coach, becoming the head coach there in G16. And after that, head coach in G19. And the head coach of the A team, of course, in the third division with the youngest team in the old third divisions, average age under 19, because when you don't have a budget, then you use the young players. Yeah, that's the situation. Meanwhile, I was been studying on a human kinetics university in Portugal. In this selective study, very been 20 coaches from all over the world. And that has been a great experience there under Jose Mourinho and some great students from the top clubs in the world.
I see. So you both of you have an academic degree in sports and football. Huh? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, because you went to, was it John Moores?
John Moores, yeah. I think I was the first cohort in, I went to John Moores in 1992. And sports science had only just started. It had only just been recognised as a degree. One of the main professors was Professor Tom Riley. So if you look in all the sports science journals, he's heavily referenced with Don McLaren and Adrian Lees and Tim Cable, who worked heavily with the FA. The sports science degree, I wouldn't say I'm a sports scientist now, Teddy. I mean, I know there's lots of people who, you know, that part of football now, or not just football, within sports science, within sport, is huge now. And it's become very, I wouldn't say fragmented, but specialised. So biomechanics, nutrition, exercise physiology, analysis. It was all thrown into one melting pot. So John Moores was the first university to offer it. So they've been very influential in with the FA and Liverpool Football Club. But the sports science degree wasn't what I expected it to be. I was expecting it to be more like physical education in the UK. So I struggled with it, to be honest. I'd been out of education for 4 or 5 years as I was playing. I found it very difficult to go back in, and that's what I said to the students that I taught. I said, you're smart, sir. You're smart. I said, I'm not smart at all. I said, I just try and apply the attitude that I took to football, working hard, to studying. I struggled with that, and then I did the Masters in Education, which allowed me to then go and teach in secondary school education, which is then allowed me, and this is the beauty of being a teacher, it's allowed me to teach in Norway. And I think that's one thing that's helped me, both in Jordan and in Norway, is that I've been able to go into schools which has got a mixed range of abilities, both academically and sport, where I've been in elite football environments as a youngster and as a coach. It allowed me to see everyone.
I see. So what you're saying, John, is that your master degree from England is accredited for you to be able to work in Norway?
Yeah, I think it's when I came to get the degree recognised. I think I went through NORCAT.
Yes.
Which standardizes, you know, what your qualifications, gives you a point system. So then that puts me into a certain pay range here. And obviously it qualifies me to work in education. Obviously you've got to go through all security checks as well. But I mean, I did from 1996 up until 2009 as a science of physical education, then head of physical education, then head of upper school, and then assistant vice rector at the same time as working four times a week at Man United with the likes of a, Gerard Piquet, a Jesse Lingard, a Marcus Rashford. So I had two quite high-pressure jobs.
Yeah. You were young in those days, you know, John, you could do that. A lot of energy.
Yeah.
But Mario, tell us a little bit about the human kinetic studies you did in Portugal, huh?
Yeah, I'm not the only one actually from Norway, because my colleague Martin Ryer from Odd Grenland and Bjørn Vidar Stenersen, now actually the assistant coach in the A team, physical coach of Stole Solbakken, yeah? They've been with me there as well. Bjorn was being directly with me in the group, and Martin was being 1 year earlier, and he actually recommended me to apply for that study because he thinks that it has been valuable for me. And I could agree with him completely. And the human kinetics is a self-selective study where you need to apply, and only 20 people from all over the world will get in through the three filters of selection. And I had the privilege to be with Nicolas Meyer, first physical coach of PSG A team, who worked with Angelotti, Blan, and many great coaches. Bjorn also, Vidar Stenersen, one of them. Another is Carlos Wiesens from Manchester City, Man City under 18 head coach. Many great. All. We had I think 13 countries in 20 people. That has been amazing experience. Here, listen from Japan, from Poland, from Norway, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, many countries have been covered in that way. And some great lecturers like Antonio Gomez, first physical coach of Barcelona A team, José Mourinho, of course, Rui Faria, Miguel Cardozo, some very, very good speakers. And that has been a great addition for what I wanted before I will step to the UEFA Pro course. Yeah, but when I was being younger and starting my education, and I could imagine when Jonathan was being younger, there was not been so much unofficial, if I can call it, education, because it has been just a formal education, UEFA, CBA, and whatever. Yeah, kinesiology eventually faculty. But nowadays you can find it almost on daily basis, 30-40 different type of education courses, and even this kind of webinars what we're doing now, or podcasts, are very, very often. And I think today unofficial education is becoming, I could say that it's becoming even more impacting than some formal education, because it's going to the practical things, it's going to the things behind the scene, if I can call it that. You can hear the real things, what's happening on the pitch, and a real experience. And when you come on when you go to some formal education, and as I've been in the Croatian Football Federation, for example, in UEFA, you have 30 students, and all of them using the learning by same pattern, and they're learning by the same things. And usually that's not easy applicable on the pitch when you have 20-30 different students, and then you won't teach them the same. And they are completely different characters and working in a completely different environment. And because of that, I believe that informal education becoming much more suitable for the people to choose what actually they need to know and they want to learn, and they can assimilate with their human profile and personality profile. That's what is what I'm feeling after this human kinetics, because it's much more suitable for coaches in the practical manner.
Now we've heard that you have a very broad background in education and also building up experience in your own country. But I want to move on and listen a little bit, because you both decided at one point to come to Norway. Two questions here. First of all, what did you know about Norway and the Norwegian football? And secondly, how did you prepare to actually come in to our country? John?
I knew about Norway because I think I've spoke to you about this before, Teddy. My sister was at Manchester University, one of my sisters, and she had a Norwegian boyfriend. So from the age of eight, I'd got a bit of Norwegian influence from my brother-in-law, Andy. So, you know, we used to celebrate Norwegian Christmas from me being eight. So we used to have the ribbe back in England, and so I'd got a bit of an understanding of it. I mean, obviously, Ollie being at Man United, you know, we used to be invited over to coach. I never came over to coach, but other guys came over and did coaching demonstrations with, I think Jim Solbakken had organised it. So quite a few of that, Paul McGuinness had come over, Jimmy Ryan. So I knew from Mark Dempsey, his experience being at Teal, that he really enjoyed it. And I was wanting to take the step from what had predominantly been the upper age of youth football. I needed to go into senior football. So when the opportunity came to go to Teal, I was really interested in it. Obviously, I visited, and my first visit was for the cup final. So I flew up to Tromsø and then flew down with the team from Tromsø to Oslo, went to the cup final where they lost. Per Mateus was the head coach with Agner Christensen as the assistant, and Agner was taking over as the head coach. And Agner had been over in November, had some conversations, done a bit of coaching with them. The fit was right for me to move into senior football, beautiful area, and the fit was right for Teal. So that was how I came. Mark had spoke very positively about Norway and his experience, and he said, yeah, you'd like it, John, and it fits where you want to be at present. So that's how I got into Tromsø.
Very good. Mario, what's your story about Norway and your knowledge and preparation to coming here?
I must be honest, I'm not even close to Jonathan. Actually, I didn't know nothing about Norway and Norwegian football. I never been in Norway before, but maybe that was being actually the important part, because I need to learn by doing it. And when I came in Norway, I didn't prepare specially. Of course, you read some basic, let's call it Wikipedia informations. I didn't know as much when I came here. First of all, we rent a place almost like online, and we didn't know that there is no bus station. Actually, the nearest bus station was being 45 minutes walk from my place, and of course I rent the cheapest place, and then I found out the reason. Actually, okay, that's the reason why I was being the cheapest one. And I was starting in Follo and going in the morning in Vidaregone school to work as a teacher there in the morning sessions at 7:30, I think, if I remember, 5 years ago. And then I need to depart from home at 5:40, for example. And then the next session is 3 o'clock afternoon, and you don't want to walk four times back and forth. Then you just stay in Ski for all day and have a session afternoon, and then you walk home at 7 at evening, yeah? And that has been for 6 months until I didn't bought the first car. Then has been the happy days. But in that way, I was being very, very interesting experience. But actually, what I was being prepared most, it is with the full bag of patience, to be very patient. And I was being actually very, very patient. But things happened faster than I planned. And after the season in the juniors and all these things, what I said earlier, and the seniors, most came and actually bought my contract from Follo, because I had a 2-year more contract with Follo. And the things go fast, and as fast as I go up, as fast as I come going down, now I'm without the club, but that's also something to practice patience.
I see. So, John, the experience, in the beginning here, I mean, was it all different to what you were having in your mind, you know? What were a lot of the obstacles and the things you had to figure out here?
I mean, it's great what Mario said, because when I moved over to the Middle East, I went with no expectations. I wasn't getting too high or too low. I tried to just keep very balanced. And the same as when I took that experience here to Norway, you know, to get involved in the culture as quickly as you can. Obviously, I'd come from two of the biggest clubs in the world. I mean, I'd been at Man United and Man City. But I knew that because Mark had been there and I'd been down to the cup final, I knew there was a lot of status. There was, you know, the football was of a high standard. So I knew what I was coming into. I mean, what I would say about Norwegian football, and I knew this before I came, they're so passionate about it. I think the Norwegians, you know, in terms of the Premier League and La Liga, I said, I think they're more fanatical than the Brits. You know, and as you are, Teddy, I mean, to support Accrington Stanley, my goodness me. and that's it. I mean, but I like that. I like that because that is real football. That's what football's about. So then once I got into the Norwegian football, then I realised that there were some bits missing that restricts the development of the Norwegian football. I believe there's a lot of talent here. And I saw it with the girls' football, because obviously I was working with the school later on, but I was amazed how talented, because there wasn't in 2013, I think my comparison in from the UK, women's football hadn't really taken off then. I'd say it's only in the last 3 to 4 years that it's taken off. But here, I was astounded, pleasantly, by the women's football. I thought they were amazing. I saw that I'd been involved in United and City, where there were numerous teams down to under 6 years of age, and there wasn't that. You know, as the assistant head coach with Agna, I didn't really watch the second team. I didn't see it. And that's one thing when I went to Tuil that I realised that I've got to see what's there, because there isn't an abundance of players coming through. So I need to know what is there and to see what players are out there. And I used to go and watch like the third level teams, and then I'd see the players there watching those games. And I was like, you would never get that in England. So there was a real interest from professionals playing for Tuil going watching the third level because of the friends. So started to understand that the football was really, it was a bigger community, especially in Tromsø. So everyone was connected within the football. So I found that quite refreshing and quite unusual as well at the same time.
Mario, you were talking about how you got to the bus in the morning. How did you approach, you know, getting to know the Norwegian football and the culture here to understand it better? How did you go around doing that?
Yes, I was facing the biggest challenges, of course, in communication, because communication is essential in this job that we're doing. And when you don't know the native language, we can say, okay, English or Norwegian speak English. Yes, I agree with that. But in the same time, it's not easy to transfer the emotions for some players who don't understand English so well, or maybe they understand, but they don't feel comfortable giving feedback on that way. And that has been my first obstacle, getting a feedback that I really want and really need, and when I really need, from the players you follow, let's say juniors or 16, when I become a head coach there. I even in one moment, first 4 months, I think that I didn't try to force it. Just I bought this body language book. It's called, I have here actually, The Silent Language of Leaders. And I bought that book, and I just in a way zoom out, and when I give some information, I try to read the feedback instead of forcing them to give me some feedback if they don't feel comfortable. And I can say that even after the most job, I felt that I could do some things better regarding communication. And I think that was been very important. And I think that I become better coach after the most regarding communication and knowledge regarding that in about Norwegian culture. Because in Croatia, we are very direct in communication. And here the people are not so direct. And the second thing, most important, players demand much more answers. In Croatia, players do what you tell them to do, and they don't think so much. They are task-oriented. And here, they want to do it, but they also they really need a bit more explanation why, when, how, and so on. In a way, like, they want more answers, in a way. And I think that that's my, you know, in the same time, advice for the colleagues who's coming here. Be ready for the questions, and be make sure that you have a proper answer. Or if you don't have an answer, just be honest and say, maybe I don't know now at the moment, but I can think tonight and tell you tomorrow.
Teddy, can I add to that? Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying there, Mario. And I think that comes down to I believed when I was, it was different for me at Teal because we'd got players from different countries, so that we defaulted to English. So that was my excuse anyway. But I think a lot of the problems that I was facing was I was believing that the players, I didn't have to explain because I expected them to know it because they were professional. And I was then looking at, well, they've been educated from 6 years of age all the way up, which is what I've experienced at United's and City's. And I'd forgotten that through all those organisations that I'd worked, there was highly specialised coaches that had done a lot of the coaching for me, who'd always worked with 16s, etc. And I think there is some of the clubs in Norway have got professional coaches from 16 and above, but there's very few below who have got coaches, professional coaches there. And I think we take it, in England, we take it for granted, especially in professional football, that all the players are receiving professional coaching all the way through. And in Norway, they're getting coached by parents. And that is something that I was really not aware of. And the voluntary, it was more like the amateur, the school football in the UK. So to get to grips with that, and I think there were some players have been fortunate because they've been coached by ex-professionals. But I think the Dugnad is wonderful. But I think there were pieces of expectations that I had on the players that probably were unfair, because I was assuming that they'd had this level of coaching, but they hadn't. So there is gaps within there. And so then once I understood that, then I could adapt. And I think that is, assuming is the biggest mistake you can have as a coach. You assume they know, so you've got to then explain. And as Mario says, then the question's coming back. And you know, now with analysis and with all the different technology that we've got, we can cater for all different types of learners. We can visual, we can talk to them about it. But I totally agree with that. There's a lot of questions, the whys, and there's probably more questions because there's maybe some steps have been missed out at a certain stage in the development that I have taken for granted from English football. Because it's a different structure, as you know, Teddy.
It is. Mario, you come from a great footballing nation, Croatia, similar to Norway when it comes to the number of people living there, but quite a different ball culture, you know. What are the big differences, you know, compared to your own nation and football culture and the Norwegian, and how have you worked around this, you know, with your background coming into a new country?
Well, yes, I agree. It's very many similarities regarding the number of people and everything. In the same time, there is lots of differences because we are a bit more competitive in the early age, and that's one of the things. Another thing is that I really believe that I didn't came here to change the world and change the country, and the way how I adjusted is just to see what I can change in inside of my environment. Otherwise, I need to adapt, and that's what it is. Jonathan said, there are parents, coaches in Croatia. You cannot be on the pitch if you don't have a license, and that's it. Otherwise, someone will report you. Parents will not be happy, and so on. Because of that, that's a bit of difference. I'm thinking Norway is actually changing and better a bit in lately. What I see, to be honest. But my main focus has been how I can work inside of my environment and not try to change the world. Of course, adding a bit of this, what I think it can be adaptable to this culture. First of all, a bit sort of, we are very obsessed with organization in Croatia in a way like systematic work. And maybe sometimes that can be a limited factor, but in the same time, I was visiting all the best academies in the world, Benfica, Sporting, Dinamo Zagreb several times. And there are all of them having common that systematic work. We can say whatever we want, but what is common with all of them is, and I've been in Copenhagen also in the old academy, All of them have the same systematic work, very, very good recruitment strategy regarding the regional and in general. And then I try to implement some things here. First of all, recruitment strategy in MOS with the scouting lists and having the network of the, I call it informers, because they're not actually paid scouts. Informers from the coaches in the smaller environment, even the referees who referring the lower leagues, some friends that I have a contact and try to gain some information so that I can get a better overview of the players in near area or even in the complete Norway. That's the way how I try to add something of Croatian things, but in the same time, as I told in the beginning, what kind of strengths are in this environment to emphasize them and maximize them. That's it.
Very good. John, keep on, because you made a few approach during your time up in Tromsø, you know, with the local Krets or regional FA, and try to work around and see maybe another system about the youth game, how they're organized. And all that. Tell me a little bit about that and the experience you got out of it.
I mean, I would go often past Tuil. It's a beautiful area, and I would notice at the weekends there was not much activity on the pitch, which was kind of the reverse to what I'd experienced in the parks and the playing fields in the UK. And once I was working at Tuil, I was trying to find out what that was about, you know, and parents were then taking the children off to the cabins, and that's great, you know. That's something that I've really addressed since I've come to Norway, the work-life family balance. I'm much better at that. I was watching then during the week that it was all competitions, all games, and I was thinking, when are they training? When are they getting to develop? And when you see the games, you see a lot of children stood off. So I spoke with the Dagleg leader, Roger Ness, and Martin Mirland, really good guys. And Roger was fantastic for me at Tuil. And Martin, in fact, Tuil's a great club. He taught me about the process and how, if we're going to change something, we have to do it very slowly, etc. So I would speak with, we'd spend hours and hours in the in Roger's office talking about how it is in England. I say, well, so this is how it works within the academy. You've got Man United, we'll have a fixture against Man City on this weekend, and we'll play the under all the even numbers on a Saturday for the boys. Won't talk about the girls because I didn't have the experience of the girls' football. There was no girls' football at Man United then. And then the odds would play on a Sunday. As, you know, and that would be at Manchester United's training ground. I said, but if you're introducing the girls, you could do the opposite at Man City. So then, in terms of recruitment for the national teams, the national coaches can come and know that that Tuil are playing Tuil on that day and on this weekend. So you can identify at 6, 8, 10 on the Saturdays all the best young boys, the same at Man City. You can go and watch the girls there. They'll all be there. I said, that's then the weekend used. That also gets people to the stadium, which then all the parents, so for the community, that's going to be better. You can then open the cafeterias, selling the waffles, the coffees, etc. I said, it's because we have the festivals, you know, like the weekend festivals where, and there's hundreds and thousands in the atmosphere. That could be every weekend. So his eyes were lighting up. Yeah. And then that allows us then to train during the week and put a structure down. Because I'd gone into Martin and on a daily basis, I would say, Martin, what are you doing? Oh, I'm organising the training. I said, but isn't that set? Isn't the set the training times? No. People just come in on a daily basis and phone up. I said, surely, you can't be doing this. I could see the stress going higher and higher. So we set about putting a structure in for the coaching. We then invited a few clubs, some of the club on the mainland. I presented with Martin this idea. and a lot were involved, were in favour of it, especially the bigger clubs, because you could see the sense in it. And we went to the Crets, and the Crets were, we can see it. But it didn't take off. It didn't take off. I contacted, I think there was a guy in Drummond who'd also done it. So we were in contact there and we tried to get it off. But the process of going through that enabled us to structure the training times at Toohill. And then we've got added facilities. So everyone has structured training times. It allowed us then to organise the dressing rooms and the storage facilities. So we got more structure there. And at the same time, then we started to look at the culture of the teams. So it was very much, because it was game orientated, it was all about winning. But now we've got the training times and the games were added on. We then started to get an understanding of the movement of players up and down the system. And this took 4 years. This has taken 4 years. 2 years as the head of sporting development, not just on the pitch, but the facilities, and then the 2 years as head coach at Toohill. And we had many young players that I wouldn't know which team they're in now. 17s, 19s, second team, first team, because they're moving up and down to suit where they are in their development. So there is the club now is the chief, and the players are now working through the club at their own rate. And at some stage, some move up into the first team. We had one boy, Kent Malik, who came from the 16 and went straight into the first team in the pre-season. And by the time the pre-season had finished during COVID, he'd gone to Bodø/Glimt. Real, real talent, along with Sebastian Tanecki. So I think those kind of successes are then the younger player and the coaches have seen this is the way. This is the way. Man, this, I said to you before, Teddy, there's five players under 20 who've all moved on to, you know, elite clubs in Europe. One to Arsenal, two to Bodø, one to Randers, and one to Tiel. So I think now they believe, but it's taken 4 years. Rome wasn't built in a day, but people have seen the benefit of it. And that makes me very proud. But I've not done it on my own. There's a lot of people with a lot of experience who've been able to hold my hand and take me there and, you know, allow it to happen. So it's been a good journey. It's been a difficult journey. A lot of, I wouldn't say conflict, a lot of difficult conversations and one step forward and two back. But we've got there, and it's now the tool's in a really good position now to move forward. And I think there's a culture there now where there's a good mix of young players going with the first team and playing for the first team, and some will have the career at Toohill, but some will have the career higher and some will have a career lower. But it's really now, it's a proper breeder club. But with the possibility, definitely I think they'll end up back in the Obus. My concern, and I've shared this with the club, is do you want to compete with Tiel? I don't know whether you should do. I think just, you know, be happy to hold a good position at an elite level, get good cup runs, produce players, have good facilities. They've got great floodlights now. They're getting the new surface, got a £150 million head knock indoor arena. It is everything a young boy or girl could want to develop into an elite footballer, or just to have a great time with friends. It's now really a solid club, but it's taken a lot of work from a lot of people. Roger, Morten Lindolsen, you know, a lot of people with a lot of vision. It's amazing because it's all their own as well.
Mario, at the moment, you are a worker. You finished your job at Moss at the end of the season. And so where do you head now? What are your ambitions and what you want to achieve, you know, being a professional football coach?
Yes, actually, I finished my episode with Moss. It has been lasting 2.5 years. And my ambitions, of course, is become the best possible I can. I maximize my potential. Actually, I always like to joke and said, I would like to work in the morning. That means in the professional level as possible. Because that boosts your quality of the family life. And I have two small sons. And that is also one of my important targets. I think maybe for me personally the most suitable would be some role of assistant for a year or two until my children don't grow up a bit and at the same time reflect a bit back what I did and look from a different perspective, because I'm 14 years only as a head coach, nothing else. And you know, you're becoming you stay in one balloon and you sometimes don't see as much as from that balloon. And I don't have anything against that, but in the same time if you open a possibility, I will go for the head coach role again, and that's not the problem. But the most important for me is that I took the right things from the period from us, because of course we all do mistakes, and I did them the same, and I'm very grateful for that kind of mistakes that I could get them in the age of 35, not later. And I don't have any special objectives except to be better next time when I come on the bench, just to be better. And that's my main objective. And I'm using this time to reflect, as I said, and speak with the people and get the real honest feedback of what has been done wrong, that I can be better. And on the end, in many situations, I learn a lot. Moss is a big club with a big tradition, as you all know. And it's not the same to be coach in Moss and follow. You follow young players, hungry, everything very, very limited. In most completely different, big tradition, big expectations. This is my objective, just to become better and stay firm on the legs. In the periods when you don't have a job, it's important to build your networking and work on yourself.
John, where do you go from here? I mean, you've been in Norway a few more years and had a few jobs abroad and then always returned to Troms. Where's your future?
I think Tromsø will be my base with Carolina and the four stepdaughters. But obviously, I'd like to get back to the UK. I think what Mario just said, on reflection, when it came to the end of my contract at Tuil, I evaluated it and I was, okay, there's something not right. What I'm putting in, I don't seem to be getting out. And maybe it was because the younger players, they had the ambition and they were great. The whole, as I keep saying, I can't, you know, overstate how good the club was and all the players. But I think with the older players, because they got the families or they were now progressing into their chosen careers, maybe it was as in medicine or as an accountant or a lawyer or in fishing industries, etc., etc. Their ambition to move higher has gone. You know, the realistic and so they want to play football at the highest level they can, maybe get a little bit of extra money. But I think that was that. But with the younger players, they were ambitious and they could move on. So I was looking and I was thinking, I've never worked in this environment before, which I'd say is semi-professional. So I thought, and I believe that the coaches, the assistants that I had, were better equipped to lead that group of players. So it was a decision that both myself and Thomas Hayder, who's like the sports leader at the club, we decided, you know what, I think it's time to step aside and let Alex at the time, Alex Samuelson, who's doing a great job there now, he understands that environment. I'd been involved in full-time football all my life. So, very long-winded answer, I want to be back in full-time football. Yes, and the role from sporting director to head coach to assistant head coach to academy director to youth coach to... I've done them all. I could be a good assistant to somebody. I can be a sporting director, I think, because of my and I experience of every role. So the next opportunity that comes has to be the right opportunity. It has to feel right. There has to be the right discussions. There has to be, you know, what is the ambition of the club? Yeah, it all depends on what opportunity comes, what type of club it is. And then it's, yeah, does that feel right? Do I feel right to them? Does it feel right to me? You know, is it realistic what the club is asking of me? There's many, many factors that you have to take into account. But I won't just jump into any opportunity just to get a salary. Because especially at head coach level, it takes up so much time. And then again, as an assistant, if you've been a good assistant, it takes up a lot of time. You're not working a standard 7 till 4. It can eat into your life. I mean, I've spoke to sporting directors in Norway and said, when you're taking phone calls at the Christmas table on the 24th, then you've got to draw a line, because then it's... But then I say, we allow that to happen. We have to set the ground. We have to set the boundaries. You know, for anyone who's listening, yeah, you have to put the work in, but I think you've got to set the ground rules. And remember, you're a human being, not just a football coach, and you're probably a husband, or you're a father, or you're a brother. And you have to remember that you've got a life. And that's Norway's taught me that. Norway has taught me that. We get the balance right.
Mario, what is your advice to foreign coaches that want to pursue a career in Norway? What are the important things they need to think about, prepare, and actually do in order to get into the culture, get into work, getting into a good lifestyle in Norway?
I already mentioned some of them. First of all, don't try to change the world. Just try to adapt, firstly, that you can get time to see the environment. That's first thing. Second, try to surround yourself with the most competent people. I must be honest, maybe it sounds critical, but try to surround yourself with the people who really understand what the environment of football is demanding. As Jonathan said, you need the answers on the phone at the Christmas table. And as a head coach, for example, most, you are answering the agents, you are answering the board, players who are not happy because of girlfriend and whatever, yeah? Because of that, make sure that you have a proper environment who can support you in that. That you don't have anything on yourself, because you will burn out in a couple of months. That's one thing. Another thing is, I think it's really important, networking. Maybe it sounds unpolite or whatever, but networking is essential. And if you want to succeed, and if you want to help someone else to succeed, and because me and, for example, you can go faster from A to B than me alone and you alone. Sure. Because of that, the good networking with the correct people is essential. That's the reason also why I said that I could be assistant, because with a good head coach who can teach you more about the culture and who can teach you more about environment, your development will go much, much faster. That means my advices, I can give 3. First, adapt yourself, don't change the world. Second, surround yourself as the most competent people you can. And third, regarding the networking, try to find yourself a mentor. Doesn't matter if you will voluntarily work for a year. Find yourself a mentor who can you work, who can you learn the culture, learn about environment, and learn about football in the end. Because football is environment, and it's very dynamic. And there's 3 main things. I missed one of them when I came. I didn't find a mentor. Now I see how important it is. I had the mentors in Croatia, but I don't have it here. I don't know why I didn't do it. To be honest, I don't have an answer on that. Maybe I just been occupied with many other things and things happening fast and I didn't do it. But be adaptable and be humble. On the end, you are coming from another culture. I'm come here very, very rigid person in terms of leadership style because of my country. Because in my country, that's been a normal style. And it's like a normal way of communication. And then I need to adjust. And I think after 5 years now that I really hit the point that I know now exactly what is necessary. And don't expect that you will do it in 1 year. Doesn't matter how smart you are and how ready you are on the adaptation. I don't think that will happen in a few months, to be honest with you, because you must experience some difficulties, and then you will be able to adjust and reflect, as Jonathan said.
I think, Teddy, just to add on to Mario, I keep saying, don't assume people know what you're thinking. What I found is very, from my experience here, I would expect my assistants to know what was needed. But I think what I've found, and I saw it with my brother-in-law, is that the Norwegian culture is, it's not standoffish when I say that negatively, but they won't step forward before they're asked to, because they don't think they want to stay in their own lane. So it's a respect thing. It's not a negative thing. So from my experience, my coaches, they would wait to be asked. In the culture that I come from in England, Man United, is if I'm seeing the coach putting cones out, I'll ask it, do you need to help? You need some help? And I think that was something that I found a little bit strange. So don't assume that everybody knows what you're thinking. If you need help, ask for help. The help will come. But it won't come if you don't ask. So it's very, very private. The culture that I work, very respectful. And I think they feel that if they ask, do you want help, that's disrespecting you as a coach. And that is something that's quite... We're both smiling at each other here, Teddy, because it is quite... You know, if you don't understand that, then you could get frustrated with it. And I did get frustrated. I was thinking, why are the guys not helping me? I would be helping them. If you ask them, they'll help. So again, it's what me and Mario have said. What you've experienced in your home country, don't expect the same things to happen in a different country. You know, communicate, communication, clarify, do understand. If you don't, I can explain it. Don't assume, and effective communication, ask.
Mario, you of course a member of the Norwegian Football Coaches Association, Trenerforening. How would you say this organization look like? You know, how is it be a member? Does it give you something? Is it important for you?
First of all, I try to in a way copy what you're doing here to my country indirectly, because I got a call there to be the president of their federation, to be their Croatian Teddy Moon, you know. And I try to copy some things, because I think it's a very high level. If I understood well, this is the fifth largest in Europe. Norwegian is fifth largest in Europe federation for coaches, if I understood well from the summer courses or something. And I think it's very useful, because in the end, coaching job is very lonely job, if I can say it like that. It's very lonely job. And if you don't have no one to support you in terms of the rules, especially if you're coming from other country, about rules, about contracts and everything, then it can be very difficult. And I had the privilege to know you from the first day when I came here. And lots of Cup Finale seminars where I had the chance to present myself and Croatia at the same time. I don't have actually nothing to complain for. And I think if in Croatia this kind of union is developed, that will be even better for all coaches in Croatia. And we for sure, in this case, maybe you can learn something from Croatia about player development. But I think that we can learn something from Norway regarding the coaches development, and for sure that can be something to look at.
John, what's your experience being a member of the Coaches Association in Norway?
Similar to Mario, I've had the privilege of delivering some seminars at the Cup Final seminar. I mean, that for me, obviously we've got the Coaches Association in England, and it's good, but the Cup Final seminar is just an amazing event where all the coaches are coming together, you know, with the Cup Final as the final piece, the icing on the cake, with some great some great guest speakers. It's a fantastic occasion. I think anybody, you know, if they've never been to it, they should go to it. It's a one to network, one to pick up great experience from top coaches and managers. I mean, you know, Roy Hodgson. I mean, the list is endless, isn't it, Teddy? And obviously the professional support, as Mario said, regarding contracts, you know, when you're entering a new job, when you're exiting a new, you know, a job. And just as you say, as the support, and as Mario was saying that, it triggered, I'm probably not the best for networking and keeping in touch with coaches at other clubs, and how is it in the South compared to the North, and similar experiences. So just as a reminder there, because it's reminded me to reach out and contact those coaches that you've come into contact with, because they are a good resource. So it's doing a great job, Teddy.
Thank you so much. Mario, would you recommend other Croatian coaches to look upon Norway as a possible place to go, to coach, to work, to have a profession?
Of course, I think if you fully follow these things that I said, like being patient and being able to adapt, I think that they should try, because there for sure is lots of places where the coaches are needed. There are much more players than in Croatia. For example, the place where I live, Drobac, have around 1,000 players, and the biggest club in Croatia have maybe 300 players, 400 players. And that means there is lots of places where the coaches are actually needed, because these parent coaches need on daily basis some sort of competence and support. And I think not only for Croatian coaches, for everyone else is a country where they can contribute if they have something to give. But in the same time, they need to be ready on these two things: patience and adaptation in that way.
John, if you were a sports director, wanted to recruit a foreign coach to come into Norway, huh? What would be the important ingredients in that work, you know, in order to get this coach to come, to settle and perform?
If I was, I would be looking at, obviously, the competence, what coaching level they're at, what experiences have they had, have they just come out of playing? Or have they done their apprenticeship, going through all the different levels? Because I think, as I have done, as Mario has done, you learn by failing. And going through the youth from 14s, 15s, 16s, all the way up, the learning, it's a long journey if you're going to get it right. I still think I'm on my journey. I'm always learning. So the competencies, I'd like to see somebody who's a range of experiences. Have they been in different countries? Because I think if you have been in different countries other than your home country, then I think it shows that you're adaptable, you've got some flexibility, you're open to a challenge, because it is going to be a challenge. Because as I said, you know, I got a Norwegian brother-in-law and I thought, yeah, I think Norway and UK, very similar mentality. We've got some key differences, so it's understanding that. So I would be looking at that. I'd like to think as somebody's got a good education behind them, maybe been working in a local as a school. I think if you have, then I think you're used to working with a broad range of abilities, broad range of mentalities, that you understand how a human being learns. So, yeah, if I was a sporting director, I would be hiring Mario.
thank you.
Yeah, I think we're coming to the end. I mean, I'd love to sit and discuss this topic even further with you, but we need to, at some point, we need to draw the line here. And I just want to thank you, both of you, first of all, for coming to Norway, to sharing your knowledge, your experience, to do really good work. And I want to see you back in work, hopefully in Norway, if not somewhere else. And you will still become very good members of Norsk Fotballtrenerforening. I'll turn over to Norwegian now to summarize a little bit for the audience and, of course, say a few things about the association and our main sponsor, Norsk Tipping. Først og fremst så vil jeg takke Norsk Tipping igjen for at de med og støtter opp om trenerforeningens arbeid for trenerstanden i Norge. Norsk Tipping generalsponsoren for norsk fotball, som bidrar blant annet for at vi skal få bedre utdanning og inspirere flere trenere til å gjøre en god jobb med barn og unge. Denne episoden har handlet om møte med to utlandske trenere som virker i norsk fotball. Den aller første utlandske treneren kom til Norge i 1908. Han var selvfølgelig britisk, og den britiske tilgangen av trenere har vi hatt i over 100 år. Vi har vært påvirket av britene på alle sider av spillet vårt. De senere år så er det kommet mange utlandske trenere til norsk fotball fra ulike nasjoner, primært i Europa. Det har gitt en solid tilvekst, et mer favorikt fellesskap av trenere. Det er vår oppgave som interesseorganisasjon for trenere også å ta vare på at utlandske trenere skal kunne ha en trygg og god arbeidsplass i Norge. Vi har nok en del utfordringer knyttet til det. Det går ikke bare på språk, men det går på kulturforskjeller og selvfølgelig ulike tilnærminger til hvordan fotball og fotballopplæring skal være. Jeg håper at denne podcasten har vært med og bidra litt til å forstå litt mer hvordan utlandske trenere ser på norsk fotball og mulighetene som ligger i vår egen sport. Til slutt så vil jeg igjen bare oppfordre alle andre trenere som lytter til denne podcasten om å bli medlem i Norsk Fotballtrenerforening. Gå inn på fotballtreneren.no og få nærmere informasjon og meld deg inn umiddelbart. Vi er en forening med over 3000, men vi vil gjerne ha flere medlemmer. Takk igjen for at du har lyttet til podcasten Fotballtreneren. Podcasten for fotballtrenere av fotballtrenere. Ha en riktig god dag.